son, she said, have I got a little story for you? What you thought was your daddy was nothing but a... While you were sitting home alone at age 13, your real daddy was dying. Sorry you didn't see him, but I'm glad we talked. I'm still alive.
It works, man. That totally horrible. Works. Thank you very much, yes. Man. I know. It's our little thing. It's a pain in the ass. I get it.
Now that I've scared everyone away and they've just shut it down.
No, everyone's so used to it now. After so many shows, they're just expecting it, right?
Yeah.
And no, thank you. I appreciate it, man. I opened up the show that way. Right? So welcome to the studio, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, I've been listening to the podcast the last couple of weeks to kind of get up to speed. And congratulations. I see you're over 700 podcasts now.
Yeah. Sometimes when people say I've been listening to the show, I get a little nervous because I start Rolodexing back and thinking, okay, what was said? What was happening? You know, but it's a show. It's there.
Oh, yeah. No, it was all good. Thanks, I'll be honest. When I signed up, I was a little nervous being the construction life, me being from more of a manufacturing background.
But it's connected.
Oh, yeah. And after listening to the show, it's all... Even though it's different trades, it's all the same issues we have. It's all dealing with people. Yep.
I'm not surprised that I've interviewed people from abroad and all over North America, and we all have the exact same problems. Yep. Which is so relatable, and it kind of puts everything at ease at that point, right? So I like that.
Yeah. I know. I think we'll have a lot of talk about even some of our philosophies on...
Bring the mic closer to you. Yeah, just pull the arm closer to you.
Yeah, some of our philosophies, even on life, government, and all those fun issues. I think
it's an evil circle right now. Yeah. Everything's going on, and it's almost like we're playing dominoes and we're just watching them all. We know what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
Common sense, like people understand that. Okay, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. But it's royally affecting the manufacturing industry, the construction industry, the labor industry. I appreciate that you reached out and you want to specifically talk about a pretty serious topic these days, which is skilled trades, right?
Yeah.
And I think personally, in my opinion, the government is out to lunch. They don't understand how to attract more skilled trades people to the industry or even get the skill to the trades. To get them, you know, understanding that they can excel in this industry. And I keep thinking, is anybody actually asking the industry what they think? Because I think that's where you should start, right?
Yeah, you would think you would start with the people that know.
Yeah.
And now that we know there's an election coming, all the things we've seen being posted the last 6 months are starting to make sense, right? It's all about money invested, but no actual real tangible things put in place to make a difference.
I stay quiet until I start seeing action, whether that's positive or negative action. I stay quiet. Once I start seeing it, then I start speaking it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't feel confident that there will be a federal election this year. I don't feel confident. We know that there's going to be a provincial election happening because someone wants to keep their job.
Yeah.
That's just how it is, right? It's unfortunate that I learned that trick from David Suzuki when I was at an event and he was the keynote speaker there. And he was just saying the number one purpose of any politician is to stay in power. That's just factual, right? Yeah. So once they get in, it's almost like a tenet that you can't get rid of. You know, the laws are always in their favor because they make them up. Yeah. But I mean, where do you want to begin? Because this show is really going to be about skilled trades. But give me one. I got to do a little quick shout out. It's a cool hoodie, but his logo is black on black. And Clint, I appreciate it. It's a really nice hoodie. I like it. So Fieldstone Construction. So I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Clint, for giving me the hoodie. And I'm wearing it on today's show, right?
Yep.
Now let's, Daryl, okay, so what information you want me to share here? You want to, because you're talking about next gen skilled trades, right?
Yeah, I've just as recently as
just setting it up, just getting started.
In the last week, I just registered myself as a business as next gen skilled trades. For the last 8 or 9 months, I've really been getting into online advocacy for skilled trades. So, putting so much time into it at night and on the weekends, I figured I might as well start a business. So, literally, just kick that off.
So, Tara, I'm just curious. I mean, my first question too would be, why? Why do you care about skilled trades?
Yeah. Well, we could. How far back do you want to go?
I want to go wherever. You drive the story, basically, right?
We could start right from the beginning.
Yeah.
I'm not. Are you familiar with Ed Mylett? He does a podcast show. It's on leadership.
Okay.
He's a good listen, but one of his favorite saying is, you're most equipped to help the person you used to be. So meaning like his father was an alcoholic who, you know, through AA was, say, a recovering alcoholic. And so someone helped him, and then his father spent the last 35 years of his life helping other alcoholics recover.
Yeah.
And he could do that because he'd been through it. So if we go way, way back to childhood, you know, I wasn't growing up. I wasn't that kid who was fixing cars and, you know, was destined to be in the career, the trades, no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up, my dad grew up on a farm. We were in the Barrie, but we were always out at my uncle's. So, you know, I was on the farm doing, you know, hard manual labor. My uncle had a welder, but I never used it. So I was around the trades. My dad did house renos. But in high school, I really had no clue what I wanted to do for a career.
But at least being on the farm, you got a chance to see the cause and effect of what your hands can do, right?
Yeah.
Like how you could learn something, be taught something, and then try it out for yourself, make lots of mistakes, and then realize how to make it better, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And learn how to work, probably most importantly. Like, you know, spending an afternoon out in the sun when it's 80 degrees, picking rocks in a dusty old field that
builds some character. Right? Yeah. When it's extremely cold.
Yes. So
you become extremely efficient on how to do things, right?
Yeah. Lots of time out in the bush, cutting trees, splitting wood.
Yeah.
Good. You know, all that stuff that kids today miss out on for
those character should be high school building. Courses, huh?
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Get them out in the woods there and just see that pile of wood there. Chop it up.
Yeah.
That's it.
And then pile it.
Pile it.
Yeah.
Move it from there to there.
Yeah.
Put some gloves on unless you love calluses.
Yeah.
What are the other, right? Yeah. Simple. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I didn't, you know, back then in high school, and I hope it's changed, but the advice was always, if you have the marks, you have to go to university.
It was kind of like that.
Doesn't matter what you take. As long as you go to university, you'll get a job.
Yeah.
And I did want to go to university more for the, you know, the life experiences than the actual coursework. So I ended up going to Guelph, and I have a 3-year BA in geography. But by my third year, I realized there weren't a lot of jobs in that.
How far back would this be? I mean, in Canada, they would have known.
I graduated Guelph in 96.
Okay.
So the options were, at that time, I don't think there was a lot of jobs in teaching. That would have been one option.
Okay.
There were some, but not a lot. During my summers at university, I worked in urban planning. So that would have been another option, but it would have...
In the Guelph area?
Actually up near, it was called the Tay Township. So it's up near Coldwater, Wabasheen, about half an hour north of Barrie.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I like that, but again, there wasn't a lot of jobs. That was the time of Mike Harris, and there were lots of government cuts. So, you know, I was trying, by my third year, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do after university. During that time, I was using a lot of like AutoCAD, other softwares, and I enjoyed that. And I kept hearing there was lots of jobs in tool and die, but I had no clue what that was. So at Christmas break during my third year, we had a neighbor who was like, I don't know, plant manager at a plant in Penetang called Techform.
Okay.
So, you know, as a kid, I can't remember if I reached out to him or my dad set me up to go for a tour, and he had the tool room manager take me around.
Were you impressed by the plant?
It was okay.
Okay.
It was nothing spectacular. And he was, you know, an old tool maker who, you know, old school, you know, all the guys that work here, they grew up, you know, fixing cars and working with their hands. And, you know, he didn't say this isn't for you, but it was pretty much implied.
So, he probably looked you up and going, not only is this for you, right? Yeah.
Okay. So anyways, thanks. Thank God I didn't listen to him.
Yeah.
So anyways, I went the next 2 years, I went to Georgian College, took the tool and die program. And I remember the first day, still remember this almost 30 years ago, first day in the shop class, you know, the teacher was showing something, and I said to him, I said, just so you know, like, this is my first time in the shop. I've never seen this stuff, never used it. And he said, well, that's perfect. That's what I want. I don't want someone coming in here who thinks they know how to use this stuff, sponge. But they don't.
Yeah.
So that kind of got me off on the right foot. Like, you know, helped me change my mindset that, you know, as long as I'm willing to learn and interested, there's people that'll help teach me and train me.
Did you pick it up quickly?
Yeah. Like yeah. When I had the last 5-10 years, I've been more on the management side of things. So I'm off the floor now, but I had a solid 20 years on the floor, building, repairing dies, and then the last 11 years working on molds. And, you know, I'm definitely not the best tool and die maker, or mold maker in the world, but definitely held my own over my career.
But now you're managing it. Yeah, you're organizing everything. Yeah,
it was last 5 years I spent as the tool room manager at MPC, and then just a couple months ago I moved into the role of production manager.
Okay.
So now I'm on the production side. But yeah, so I think, you know, that's a really long-winded story to say why am I passionate about this, but I think there's a ton of kids out there who don't know what they want to do. They're being told to go to university, and then... But we need those kids who are bright, who can learn, you know, they're curious, ask lots of questions, know how to problem solve. Like, those are the kids we want in the trades so they can help drive us to the next level in the future.
My biggest concern, Daryl, whenever we talk about this subject is, and we don't have any of this data, I want to know how many kids are being turned away from the skilled trades. And what I mean by that, I mean they're given a path to start, whether that's government or a friend or something, right? They just start this path.
Yeah.
And then at some point during the course of this path, they're given incorrect information or they're navigated towards things that are not really for them. And then they lose interest in skilled trades and then they move on and go do something else.
Yeah.
That's what I'm concerned about, because I think that number has been increasing.
Yeah.
Because I think that we only succeed in trades when we're given the right information by maybe the right or wrong person. And then we move forward. As long as we keep on moving forward. And I think a lot of the kids today, they're not moving forward. They're doing lateral moves. And then they're questioning, well, do I really want to be in trades at that point, right? Yeah. And that's nerve-wracking to be in that situation.
Yeah. Either that or they get an apprenticeship or do a high school co-op and they're stuck with some jerk who treats them like garbage, then, you know, they're lost. They're never going to come back, or most of them aren't going to come back after that, right? They're going to be looking for other careers.
What's your take on the apprenticeship rule, the 1-to-1 now, that it used to be 2-to-1 and now they went back to 1-to-1, and I think that it should be 3-to-1. I think that with us having fewer tradespeople that can share the information, we should start bringing in more kids for those individuals.
So you mean like one journeyman for three? For sure. I know, especially for mold makers specifically, our industry is in big trouble.
I don't know anybody who's like, oh, I got my hand up, I want to get into that.
Yep.
I don't know anybody.
Nobody. There's more kids who want to get into the CNC side of things.
Makes sense.
But yeah, for mold makers, let's put it this way, we've got two guys still working full time who this summer turned 69. Yeah.
So they're done. Like it's five years.
Like basically they could retire at any time. Yeah.
I've been, since day one on this show, I've been trying to push some sort of a mentorship program.
Yeah.
I want to take the older people, even the ones that have recently retired and just enjoying life, but I want to compensate them to educate the kids, not to razz them, treat them shit. I don't care about that. You can have your jokes and do all this other stuff, but take that wealth of knowledge that you got 40, 50 plus years or whatever and start handing it off to the kids.
Yeah.
And then, these older people, and for the most part, they're all men, they need to be compensated to do that, right?
Yeah.
And that way they can come in 3-4 times a week or whatever and then have a pool of kids that they work with and show them the right path.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're fortunate in that way that our older guys, we've got those two guys and then another guy who's about 55.
Yeah.
They enjoy sharing their knowledge with the kids.
They're not angry at the world anymore.
No. And that's something in my role as tool room manager for 5 years, I worked hard on was changing that tool room culture. Anyone that was what we'd refer to as a culture terrorist who didn't want to share information or was just nasty to work with, we just had to no matter how good they were at the job. We just
had
to move on.
Why do you think they
on.
Were like that?
I don't know. It seems there's so many of the older generation that were like that. And I'm not sure. I don't know if because tool room culture was like that for so long. It was just the way they were trained and...
I don't know. I get the sense that maybe they're like the grumpy ones at that age still. You don't really have much reason to be grumpy unless you look at other people that came up the ranks with you and they're probably, in your eyes, more successful than you are. So yeah. You start thinking, I'm 65 years old and this is what my value is versus this is the guy that I grew up with, worked with in the industry,
yeah.
And he's 10 times more successful. And it's wrong to compare the apple and apple, right? Because you don't really know the whole story of the other person. And in all fairness, if you're grumpy at that age, there's probably other underlying reasons why. Sure. It's not just solely the construction industry. Right?
I was just going to say, I think some people, that's just the way they are.
Yeah.
Whether they're at work, whether they're at home.
They just keep on collecting chips.
Yeah.
That's all it is, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, just let them all go and just figure out. How it's kind of good what you're doing where you looked at the industry and thought, well, how do we fix this?
Yeah.
We know there's a problem, but how do we fix it?
Yeah.
And then let's just come up with solutions, and there's no real wrong answer on this, but we want to hear what are the possibilities that we can do. But I mean, I don't think that anything that the government is doing is actually fixing it. I think it's just, they're creating media bites.
Yeah.
And now that, like you mentioned earlier, it's an election year, they just milk those media bites.
Yeah.
Like, we need more people and skilled. Like, Ford just did it recently. He just announced more money going into retraining and all this. I go, dude, I understand. You're looking for your job to get extended. I totally get it. But it's not right.
Yeah.
Right? And so we have to really come up with some good ideas on how to do this.
Yeah.
Stop being chained to your construction company. That's what Revelate delivers to contractors like you who are trying to figure out AI and automations. I hear it all the time with guys I talk to, and it sounds like they spend way more time on things that waste money. Here's how Revelate does it. They study your business. They build custom AI software and automation tech to fit your process. They train you and your staff so you can save 50% of your time on the stuff that slows you and your projects down. You got into the trades to build things, not to be buried under endless admin work and broken systems. I know every day feels like you're solving the same problems instead of moving forward. That's why Revelate was created. They grew up in the construction industry and have been a part of it for more than 15 years. They know the grind and they work to fix it. Within weeks, you and your team and your business are saving half of your time on the stuff that keeps you from getting home and enjoying life. No more nights buried in the paperwork, just more time building and living. Stop being stuck in chaos. Let Revelate help you build something better. Book a demo. It's an easy chat and it's free. Book time now. www.revelate.com or on IG at revelate.inc or call them at 416-474-5755. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Yeah, before we get into that, I just want to touch on the mentorship part of it. And that's something we've realized as a company is that we need to do more of is mentorship and leadership training. So we're actually hoping to kick it off after April 1st, which is when our new business term starts, is an actual mentorship leadership program for for the whole company, anyone who's interested. And what we'll do, we're going to have applications where people have to take time, fill this out so we know that they're actually interested and going to invest the time.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have an actual program where we're meeting with them once every 2 weeks, once a month, and have work on leadership along with us mentoring them so we can build that next generation of leadership.
And you guys are offering this to all the employees there?
Yep.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what the response is, how many people are interested and apply to the program.
So, I mean, April 1st is coming up pretty quick. Have you seen a list of people already putting their names in?
No.
Okay.
I've been working on kind of a draft, the application, kind of the outline of what it is we're trying to achieve, and then kind of the first five. Whatever that time period is, twice a month, once a month, kind of the first 5 days that we're going to meet. You're right. It's February 1st. We've got 2 months to figure it all out.
Listen, in my eyes, the winter's almost over because once we hit February, we have the harshest of the months, right? And then we start seeing a little bit of color in March, and then we start hearing the birds chirping, and all of a sudden spring's around the corner, right? And stuff that we wouldn't be walking around in November, December, we're walking around in at the end of February, early March, right? Yeah. Because it's, in our eyes, it's warm compared to what's been for like the couple of months. So it comes pretty fast. With this mentorship program that you guys are working on, are you looking to take, you know, I guess, general labor that works there and then go, listen, what are some of the things that you're interested in and then try to move them up the ranks kind of idea?
That is part of the program will be that, you know, if they're accepted, if they apply and they're accepted, there's no guarantee that they're going to move up the ranks at MPC because if we have 85 people.
Okay.
Maybe 8 or 9 manager positions, half a dozen supervisor positions. So if we get 20 or 30 people apply, there's no way everyone will be able to move up to a new position.
Yeah.
But they're still going to get that same leadership training, mentorship. They can apply to their job that they're doing now.
And but they also can also apply to their personal lives.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Which you never know. So, like you, there could be something that they're working on the side.
Yeah, exactly.
That'll help them out, right? It makes sense. I wish more companies started doing that.
Yeah. It's something that it's really been hitting home the last 6 months is, you know, in terms of the skilled trades is obviously we can't rely on government to make this happen, right? So it's up to those of us in the industry, those of us in the trade to help drive this forward and attract the next generation of skilled trades along with our companies, industry. I've been trying to work with Georgian College is like 10 minutes from us, but also a little bit with Centennial and Sheridan. Been working with the Simcoe County District School Board through OEAP, the Ontario Youth and Apprenticeship Program.
Yep.
It's going to take all of us to figure this out and make sure that we have enough skilled trades in the future.
When you guys at MPC, when you guys are starting to put this idea together about this mentorship and leadership, did you guys discuss what's this going to cost on our end to do this? Or what's this going to cost if we don't do this?
Yeah.
Did you guys discuss that? Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of what it would cost us, no, we didn't consider that at all. It was more, what's it going to cost if we don't do it, right?
Okay.
Especially with the younger generation, they want to see their career path. They want to have a game plan. They want to see that you're investing in them. Because if you don't have a goal or something to look forward to, something to achieve, then what's the point, right? You're just coasting through life.
I'm trying to get a sense. I pitched at the start of, I guess it was towards the middle of last summer. I was trying to get more and more shows where I wanted to bring students in.
Yeah.
Kids that are in high school or kids that were actually starting post, whether that was in the trades or something else, right? And I wanted to do panels of kids, and I wanted to give the kids an opportunity to speak to us senior guys to just pick our brains, right? The unfortunate thing is that the kids were scared shitless.
Oh.
They were just too nervous to get on camera, to be in the show.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm giving you an opportunity to ask whatever questions you want, because I never got that opportunity to speak to somebody.
Yeah.
When I wanted to learn something in the trades, I was just asking everybody, whether they're young or old. I was a new fish in the business, and I was like, I needed to learn. That's all it was, right? But I started thinking, you know, do kids today try to figure out their career path, or do kids today try to keep up with the Joneses and let everybody know that they're making X amount? Because I graduated out of high school in 89, right?
Yep.
And then I get out of university in 99. And all of a sudden, I'm like, when you were talking back then, anybody who was making six figures, 100 grand, they're wealthy back then. But nowadays, 100 grand in someone's pocket is not wealthy, right? You're surviving.
I saw the other day that 100 grand now is the equivalent of about 40, 45 in 1990.
Yeah.
If you were making 100 grand back then, you've got to be making 183 now to make the same.
But what's Stats Canada saying? Right now, I think the average Canadian is making what? Less than 50,000? It's around there.
Yeah.
And that's 2025, right? So you've got these kids that are trying to find positions in career paths that are at least minimum 100 grand, which technically, like you said, is more like 40, 50 grand in reality, right? So and you get into skilled trades, you get into any kind of the trades, the top three will give you that money within 2-3 years of your training, and you start making $100,000. But what's the competition out there? And because that's what I think is that today, what's different than what it was back in the 90s or 80s, the competition wasn't there. You had an option to do trades because it was there, and you weren't competing against all kinds of other different careers outside of the celebrity status bullshit. Yeah. Social media, everyone thinks that they're going to be an influencer and make loads and loads of money, right? Which is not, if you actually took the percentages, it's probably less than 1% actually breaks that hump, right? So yeah, you've got the other 99 fighting for that 1% position where you'll become this superstar and make millions of dollars. But the trades doesn't give you that option. So are they looking at trades and then looking at the competition going, I don't want to do trades, I'm going to go and gamble on trying to be an influencer or try to do this or try to do this other career, and then I'm going to make a lot more money than the trades, which for the most part is not true.
Yeah. You know what I mean? That's a big, and it's a big struggle we have in the manufacturing trades, because you are apprentices with a 2-year college degree, you're starting at $23-24 an hour. So even by the time they're done their apprenticeship, unless they're working a pile of overtime, they're not making anywhere near $100,000.
Do they pay attention to, I'm sure that someone could do the study on this and deep dive into it. Lots of top executives started at the bottom in big companies, you know, and then they worked their way up. They came up with good ideas, and all of a sudden they went from laborer to, you know, a 4-person on the floor, and then to a site manager, and then to they just grew. They went with the company if they saw the potential with the company. Are the kids even paying attention to that?
I don't know, but when I'm sending out my posts on the skilled trades or going into high schools to talk, I'm definitely talking about career paths. And, you know, like I use myself as an example, right? Started out on the floor, you know, I was on the floor for a good almost 20 years, probably. Then became supervisor, tool room manager, and now I'm production manager. And my ultimate goal is to be operations manager.
Takes time.
It takes time, but there's definitely, you know, there's different ways to build your career.
The other concern that I have outside of trying to figure out how many kids are being taken off the path and then disappearing from skill trade as an option. The other one is that I don't think any of this new generation of skill trades that are getting into the industry want to be that 60-year-old trades still swinging the hammer.
Yeah.
They want to tap it out at 30 or possibly 35, and then they either want to be an entrepreneur and start some sort of widget or business, and just that's their career path. So I don't see any of them saying, you know what, I'm 30 years old, I'm going to be in this when I'm 60. I don't think that's there. I don't think this generation's there. They don't want to have that curse, so to speak.
No, you're right. And it's unfortunate that so many of them want to be influencers or YouTubers or, you know, no one wants to go get a real job, right? And have to work. You know, no one's out in the field picking stones at the farm building that character, right?
Yeah, but it's also like there's plenty of people have built successful careers and also businesses off the back of really simple, monotonous things, right? Like when you deep dive into people and what, like GFL, like there's like it's garbage. And someone's turned that into a $1 billion industry. And that was a young individual that did that. So if there's other ways that you can figure out, I don't know, there's got to be things.
And that's why, you know, I'd love to be able to attract more of those bright kids in high school into the skilled trades. But right now it's, you know, a big, big opportunity we have is changing that mindset on the trades. It's still kind of looked down on, right?
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say that I was at an event. Someone was guest speaking at an event for students, high school students. And it was good for me to be there as a fly on the wall, right? I was just helping out. I brought a camera. He wanted to record it. And I was going, let me record it, man. So then you're guest speaking there and you can use this and promote it later on, right? And I was just looking at the faces of the kids that were listening to the speech, like the presentation. Yeah. In my opinion, it was a good presentation. Like it hit on strong points and the value of trades and getting into trades and everything. But I swear to you, every kid, deer in the headlight, glazed over look. Is that what you see too?
Yeah. So far, I'm like I said, I'm just kind of getting into this. But in early December, I went to a high school, talked to four different grade 10 careers classes about the skilled trades.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was, you know, after there were two different teachers for the four classes. So afterwards, I was asking them for some feedback. You know, I'm like, what can I do differently? You know, I did a cahoots on so they could do something on their phones and ask them questions and tried to make it interactive.
Anything?
No.
Were they on their phones when you were presenting? Because some of the kids were at this event.
Yeah, no, the teachers had said, you know, other than when we were doing the cahoots, no phones. But yeah, it was, I asked the teachers after, I'm like, what am I, you know, for next time, what do I do differently to try and get some engagement? And then both teachers were like, yeah, it's kind of the way it is every day. That's, so, it's, I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
Have you seen Andrew Brown's stuff on LinkedIn? He's out of the States, but okay. Every morning at 8 on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, he's putting up videos for skilled trades advocacy, and he's been doing it for a while, so they're pretty, you know, it's entertaining. They're high-quality videos.
Where's he out of? What state?
It's a good question.
Is he in the East or the West? Or
I think it's more East.
Okay. Yeah. I find that
but
America on the East side is more... they put an effort in versus the West side, right? The West side, I hardly, it's crickets out that way, right?
Yeah. It's cause, they're all into the software out in California, right?
Yeah. But that's what, but, I mean, some of the thing with the kids and the skill trades, I've been explaining over and over, like, you don't have to swing a hammer to be in skilled trades.
Yeah.
You have to pay attention to the technology that's coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
Everyone's always fascinated when you see a robot tie wiring rebar. And then the question becomes, well, AI is going to replace this laborer now that used to do that. And I'm like, yeah, but who designed that robot? And someone has to have the understanding of that tie wire and how it works. So you can get into the skilled trades without swinging the hammer. You can figure out processes, machinery, techniques, new material. Like I came across hemp-based block out of the U.S., and they're using it in construction now. Someone came up with that because we're so used to concrete and aggregates and all this other stuff. Like, these are the things that you could be a part of when it comes to construction. And in my opinion, without knowing the knowledge on that, I think there's big money behind that career. If you start coming up with these processes and these pieces of material, new ideas that will build our future homes or future buildings, you can make a really healthy financial career out of it, right?
Yeah, for sure. And it's the same in our trade. That's what I'm almost targeting kids who are into computers and computer programming for getting into the CNC field.
Yeah.
Cause we do, the molds we build are pretty high end, high tolerance, you know, some of our components we're working to within plus or minus 0.2. Yeah. So, you know, and we know there's the shortage of mold makers to put these tools together. So one way, we're always going to need people to put the tools together and then repair them when they're in production.
Yeah.
But one of the ways we can reduce a bit of that need for labor is by machining the components up front to that tolerance. Then when the mold goes together, it goes together easier. There's less manual work to make it work.
Yeah.
We actually have a guy on the floor who is our CMM operator, and his hobby is computer programming. So he was able to write us a couple different programs. One was for our CNC machines for machine monitoring. So if the machine goes down in the evening when we leave, it would automatically shoot an email or a text to the operator. And if we need to go back in, they'd know to go back in and restart the machine. And so, you know, you could buy that software for $2,000 or $3,000, but he, you know, was it any cheaper for us to have him program it? Maybe not. Might've been the same cost, but he got the enjoyment and the reward of doing, you know, he got paid to do his hobby at work, basically, right? Yeah. So it's a win-win situation.
Yeah.
We had another one where it was basically data transfer that we'd been, you know, doing manually, and good old fat finger errors, right? Doesn't matter what trade you're in or what job that happens. And he was able to write a program to automatically transfer all that information.
Three-way the world. These little puppies, I'm speaking from experience. I've actually installed these and I love these. Three-way prefabricated inside drywall corner, the first one-piece solution for perfect, crisp corners every time. With Three-way, you'll improve your quality, save on labor, and cut down on time. Traditional methods require three tapes, lots of sanding, and high skill. But with Three-way corners, they install in just a fraction of the time with fewer steps. It is adjustable for any angle, reinforced to cover gaps, and designed to blend seamlessly into the corner. Say goodbye to pesky touch-ups and hello to flawless finishes. Try Three-Way today and revolutionize your drywall game. Perfect corners every time. To purchase or check out some how-to videos to see the installs in action, visit threeway.ca or connect with them at 306-514-3768 or drop them an email at threewaytheworld@gmail.com. Connect with me, TCL, and stop by the studio and get a free pack on us for anyone to try. And trust me, I'm telling you, you'll love it. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Which is That's huge.
Working in the skilled trades without working in the skilled trades, right?
Exactly.
And then you're doing what you're loving, like the kids that are computer solvers. That's what we need. We need more of those things. And then you need to educate the current. And then what happens, I think the trickle effect will happen is that 30, 40-year-old that I said is not planning on staying until they're 60, they will stay because they'll see this new tech coming in. And now they're going to get off the field and they're going to be in the office managing more projects and securing more contracts because all this new tech and this software that some kid who came into the industry developed.
Yeah.
It works.
Exactly.
It totally works as a circle at that point, right?
And you're right about AI and robots. It was probably 5 or 6 years ago, two or three of our different machines, we added automation units to them. So it's, you still need someone to program all that work and set it up. Yeah. But with the automation, we could pretty much double our spindle time on our machines. So, and because we can't find the labor, it's hard enough to find people to work on day shift, let alone someone who wants to work an afternoon shift. Well, now we don't need them. We've got the automation that can run all night, switch parts out and keep going.
So in your opinion, is there anything on the government side of things, are they doing right regarding attracting more skilled trades?
On the big picture, I think it's good that we're finally at least getting them to pay attention, right?
Yeah.
For so many years, the trades have been kind of looked down on and ignored. In high school, it was always, probably the last 40 years, everyone's got to go to university to get a job. So at least now they're putting some focus on the skilled trades. But it is, specifically in Ontario, I think there's still a bit of confusion because you've got the Ministry of Labor, who right now is looking after apprenticeships, but that's switching over to Skilled Trades Ontario.
Okay.
It used to be the Ontario College of Ontario College of Trades.
Trades.
So it'd be nice to get some consistency there. You've got OEAP, the Ontario Youth Apprenticeship Program, which is run through the school boards, but is actually funded through the Ministry of Labor.
Yep.
I think it would be nice if we could streamline that and not have so many different.
My issue with OEAP is the amount of money that is going into the program and the amount of people that are going into the trades.
Yeah.
Don't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Because if you were to do that as a business owner, you wouldn't survive.
You wouldn't survive.
You'd be in credit land forever, right? Borrowing money to just keep on. Like they're a single digit return on investment.
Yeah. I've never seen how much
it's, we spend. It's 75 million now, right?
A year.
That's what they got last year and the year before, I think. They had an increase from 50 and then they went to 75, I think it was. But when I was told it was like less than 9% that the kids were staying in the industry.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's a failure in my opinion. Because at that kind of money, you should be seeing 50% staying in the industry.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Well, and the other difference would be if it was a private business, you would be looking at, because each school board basically is doing their own thing.
Yeah.
So you would figure out what school board is doing the best job and getting the best returns and then standardize that across the province. Because I know in Simcoe County, I've been on the Precision Skills Advisory Board for the last 2 years.
Okay.
So specifically mold making, tool and die, general machinist. And we've got a good group of people from industry who are invested in that. We meet a couple times a year. There's a program called Advanced OEAP, where for our trades, where they apply in grade 11. So it's the same thing. They have to fill out an application. We have a day of interviews. And then in grade 12 for their second semester, they do a co-op.
Okay.
And during May and June, they actually go to Georgian College and complete their level one apprenticeship schooling. So they graduate high school already having completed level one apprenticeship schooling. So
that's a smart move, yes.
And they're signed up.
Yeah.
And I think last year we had, it was a record year. I think we had 14 kids who were going into the program for this semester.
I know that because I've had other people in different high schools, different areas of the country, and how they have the full responsibility of finding the placements and finding businesses that will take on these kids. And it's always a challenge for them to do that, right? Yeah. And my thought process is like, this is really simple. Take some of that money that's going into OEAP or any other kind of bullshit things that the government is spending money on and start incentivizing the businesses as tax credits.
Yep.
So then as long as the government doesn't get into my books, because I understand that they've tried so many grant programs, like you'll get 10 grand if you bring on this kid, no questions asked, whatever, but you've got to open up your books for us to look at it. No business owner wants that, right? The government already is in our books too far down in our books, right? But if you start saying, listen, bring on a kid, you're a business, you're established, you need the workforce, we're going to benefit you as a result of bringing on this kid. Now you're responsible for this kid. Right. Yeah. And now you can train this kid, but now you're being paid and your business is being benefiting from it. Right. Which is important, I think, in my eyes. Then once that word gets out, more and more businesses will reach out to high schools. Go, listen, how many kids do you have? This is my business. This is what I'm looking for. Anybody interested in mechanics, in plant, in plastics or anything like that?
Yeah.
That'll start opening up a bunch of avenues for kids. Right.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff there. That's one of the things I've thought about for Next Gen Skilled Trades is I don't have the programming ability, but I've got another guy I work with who could build. Basically, we built one at work, a database, so that we can find stuff easier. You know how it is when you've got a bigger company, 85 people, you've got files and folders all over the place.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to find a simple drawing, it takes like 12 mouse clicks, which is just a waste of time.
Yeah.
So he's built this database, and basically now if I want to find a drawing, I type in the job number and two mouse clicks, and I've got...
You're done.
And we've done that. So we've been growing that for about a year now, and we've got a list to keep the guy busy for probably two more years developing this. But I was thinking of something similar for the trades, like for co-op kids, apprentices. If you had a database of all the companies looking for co-op kids or apprentices, and then you had a same database with all the kids looking for those positions by area, then we can connect all those people, right? Kind of makes sense, right? And in terms of incentivizing for businesses to take a high school co-op, because I know we're in the same boat, it's just as a smaller company, we don't really have someone that I can assign to babysit. Because the reality is, that's what it's going to be for a high school co-op, at least for the first few months, right?
But you have to invest in the kid, right? You have to.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, if there was some way for the government to, like you say, tax break or something. And that's a whole other story, right? The $1.5 billion they've spent on the Skills Development Fund. Have you heard of that one?
I've heard briefly about it, and it's just like, okay, where's this money coming from? It's more printed debt money. That's all it is, right? So that makes no sense. I think that there should be an audit. So you can have your media, and I go back to they're keeping their jobs. You can have your media soundbite at that point. I don't care, right? But the thing is, before you can announce that, you need to let us know. It was unfortunate. I've had people in here where there was a grant, that same grant process, and since they didn't hit their numbers, the program got canceled.
Yeah.
So in hindsight, when you look at it, you're like, okay, so this seems like a good program. This seems like it's going to attract a bunch of people, but yet it didn't attract. And then, like, I'll give you some scary numbers. The government was expecting to attract 30,000 people into this program. They ran the program for a year, and they attracted 1,500. less than.
Yeah.
That's a huge void, right? So but the money was allocated to attract the 30,000, but we didn't get the 30,000. We only got a fraction of it. So that's a failure. And you need to figure out, where is the failure at that point? Was it because, I mean, I can't tell you the last time I was on a government website. It's not the easiest to navigate. But I don't think these kids, I would want to find out. I like what you're talking about with next gen skilled trades, where you have one list of kids, you got one list of businesses. It's a Tinder. You're kind of connecting the two together at that point. That's what the government needs to do. So I would be auditing that 30,000 failure and find out exactly what the problem is before you start announcing another 1.5 billion now, because that's just going to happen exactly the same way.
Right. Exactly. Like you said before, if it was a private company, who would keep pissing it's away not sustainable. Money? Like, right.
You like, we're right now, everybody is in survival mode business wise, small construction businesses, even the big players, they're all in survival mode right now, because unfortunately more than half of the union members are at home right now. Because constructions are not starting. So we don't have a labor shortage right now. We have a connecting new labor to construction projects shortage. That's what we have.
Yeah. And meanwhile, 2 weeks ago, they announced about $27 million. They're investing in apprenticeship schools through the unions for carpenters.
Why when you have more than half at home?
So here's my second idea for a database is... Because we keep hearing, we need skilled trades. So exactly what skilled trades do we need them in? You know, like,
they never define that.
Right? Everyone right now, all the kids I talk to want to be electricians. But all the electricians I talk to are like, well, there's no positions for apprentices. We've got lots, right? And they keep saying we need all these people in construction. And meanwhile, half the people are at home, right? I listened to your can't remember the gentleman's name, but he was into the concrete finishing. I think it was
GFI or
yeah. And he was saying, you know, there's almost barely any new high rises going up.
Well, there isn't any. All the starts stopped. So there's no sure sign of what's going on.
For the first time in 20 years, the union's not accepting any new members. So if we had a database that showed, like, what trades do we actually need people in? In what trades don't we, so we could help direct youth, right? Like, if we, I know that's hard, but
it's not hard. It's not hard to find out what is, right? The problem is that you've got a federal government that's choking growth right now.
Yeah.
Like, the workforce that we would need right now, if we started digging for oil, is unheard of. We would need tens of thousands of people. Right. And the same with natural gas on the east end, too, as well. Right. So if you don't start building the projects right here, I'm looking forward to a show that's coming to be coming down the pipe of a company that creates solar panel cladding. So the actual cladding of the structure is the solar panel absorbing material.
Yes. Yeah.
It's Canadian made, Canadian technology, shipped globally. We need to attract more companies to do that. Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's what I'm saying is you need to get a kid or kids understanding, how can I make a better block? How can I make a better light bulb? How can I make all these materials that we need? And they need to be started in Canada, funded by Canada, and then built here in Canada, and then sold globally. That's what we need to start doing. We need 10,000 versions of that solar panel cladding company.
Yeah.
And then you have a workforce that you need. You need all levels of workforce. You have more construction starts. You have more labor people that we do need. The top three, electrician, plumbing, and HVAC, they're always in demand. They're recession proof. I also tell the kids, you can go anywhere in the world with this knowledge. Your adoption is a lot smoother if you get trained here in Canada and you want to go to the UK or you want to go to Europe, you want to go someplace else. You'll just have to learn their rules regarding whatever it is that trade, right? But you could pick it up a lot faster. But concrete's the same thing too. If you start getting into concrete infrastructure, framing is a different story. You know, there's a company that we did a show with out of Germany that's they're doing trade, I guess, like exchange student kind of idea. They've got trades in Germany and they'll come to Canada or they'll come to the US and then they'll swap out somebody from here and go there. And now both parties are learning both sides of you know, construction on the, and I'm like, that's Journeyman Group or Journeyman. I can't remember exactly what they had, but I did a show. And then that's a good idea, because that starts to get kids realizing, well, I could travel and I can go work someplace else, but I got the skills here, right here in Canada. So we're not doing any of that stuff. So until we get all this stuff going, which can't happen until we start spending money, not printing money. I think the printing of money is causing failure after failure after failure. We're not getting any successes. Yeah. And as small business owners, you need to have small wins. Otherwise, you don't move forward. All we have are large losses coming from the government.
Yeah, you're right. We need that innovation that's developed within Canada to sell to the rest of the world. The idea of the solar panels, that reminded me. This is like 12, 14 years ago. I worked with a young guy who was that same thing, into computers, kind of an outside the box thinker. And that's what, at that time, he was talking about, you know, if only we could develop some kind of paint that was a solar panel, right?
But smart.
Yeah.
I think it's 100% smart. I love the fact that it's made here in our own backyard and it's sold globally. They've got two or three big buildings that are being built in the Middle East using this product, this technology, right? And I'm like, this is great stuff. I never have a conversation about the green, the climate. I don't care about any of that crap. I care more about, we have a huge nation that has a lot of natural resources and we're not putting people at work for those resources. Yeah. That's as simple as that, when we should be doing it.
Yeah. No, I think from listening to your podcast, I think we have the same view on EVs and everything around that. Yeah.
Listen, it's a product. It's an option. You could either buy an Android or an Apple. I don't care, whatever. But don't tell me that either is saving the planet, because it's not.
And don't tell us that by 2035 all our vehicles have to be EV.
Good luck on that one. Like, it's not going to happen.
It was a joke when he announced it however many years ago.
They can keep on trying to do all that stuff. Yeah. Let it. Like, I'm not a fan of push button starts in cars. I still like two keys for a car. Like, I'm old enough to just enjoy that simplicity of it, right? Hey, homeowners and businesses. Are you looking for top-notch tile and stone services you can trust and count on? Consider the expert tradesperson behind the Tile Guy GTA, Omid himself. He takes pride in delivering quality service and professional installation on time and on budget. From mosaics to large slabs to custom niches and miters, the Tile Guy GTA has you covered. With years of experience and a commitment to excellence, Omid and the team at the Tile Guy GTA are your go-to professionals for all your tile and stone needs. From full waterproofing solutions of every possible product to the finish, grouting details, even a hint of design recommendations when the client needs to hear the truth. Call the Tile Guy GTA today, 647-716-5062, or email them at thetileguy.gta@gmail.com. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. I still want to get back to how do we, because I think these kids are leaving the industry before they even start in the industry. Yeah. That's the unfortunate part. Yeah. And it's hard to...
Well, and even if you want to go even further, how many of them know about the industry?
They don't know. Well, I'll even go further than that, Daryl. Why are we sugarcoating the industry to protect their feelings? Why are we going that far?
Yeah.
Like, I got into construction and I'm Portuguese and I met whatever, as many different people as possible. We all razzed each other. It was just done out of, like, we were just working together, screwing around, and that was it. But in today's definition of what's going on, that's offensive, and you can't be speaking to anybody like that. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, I've seen well-oiled construction job sites when that shit is going on. Yeah. Everybody respects each other because the skills are still first. The jokes are second.
Yeah.
The skills are far more important. So I will never hire anybody based off of their race, their sex, their religious. I'm hiring them based off their skills. And I've always said it on the show over and over, and I've been in presentations. Skills has no race, it has no sex, and it has no culture. Skills are skills. I don't care what it is. So I want you to learn the skills first, and then you prove to me that you can do the job. I'll give you the opportunity to do the job, and now it's on you. Do the job. Impress me, and then I'll hire you again. I had a guy recently on the show talk about how being hired a second time is the biggest compliment, because it means that you did right the first time.
Yeah.
So true. Right? And so it's like, why do we have to worry about trying to figure out how to speak to people without being offensive to them when this is construction? I'm not saying that you're going to be rude and crude and all kinds, yeah. but I'm just saying, like, focus on the skill and focus on the job and then give them the opportunity to prove themselves. But if they don't have the skill, then I can't use you. I'm sorry, I can't.
Yeah.
The reason you hire somebody is so then you can build your business and be profitable. It's not a daycare. It's not a babysitter. I'm not babysitting you. So I need to make money off of you. So if you're asking 25 or 30 bucks an hour, then I means I should be billing you out at 50 bucks an hour for me to be profitable as a business. If I'm not doing that, then you can't be here.
Yeah.
You're a nice yeah. person and all, but you can't be here.
And I think I heard you mention on one of your other podcasts, it's like, yeah, if I'm not joking around with you and we're not making fun of each other, then that's not a good sign. You know, if we're doing that kind of stuff, that means I like you and appreciate you and like working with you, right? Like, you got to have that kind of fun or else.
Right now, there's a bunch of banter on DM groups on social media, and I love it. It's the plumbers against electricians, yeah. and electricians against plumbers, and I find it hilarious.
Yeah.
I think it's because the funny thing is every joke you hear, you're like, yeah, I heard that joke, but it wasn't a Portuguese guy. It was an Italian guy. That's the only yeah. difference. But it's still done out of love and respect. Simple yeah. as that, right? And I'm like, and by the way, how do you do this? And I'm always impressed by the skill and how someone's figured that out. But I'm even more impressed by how someone shares that skill.
Yeah.
I don't get along with people who covet their skills yeah. and don't want to share it. I don't get along with people like yeah. that. Because you have to share this stuff.
Yeah. Are there many people like that still in the construction industry?
I don't come across it. In my days of construction, one or two
yeah,
at the most, right? And they did it and then they would hide it. And I had one guy flat out just tell me, you have to leave right now because I'm going to do something that I don't want you to steal from me. And I said, you realize that I wow. hired you to yeah. do this job, right? And it got to the point where I called his employer and I go, if he doesn't do what needs to get done right here with me here, then you guys don't bother coming back tomorrow. Simple as that. Then he called him and go, just do the job. And then yeah. I saw his little secret. And I was like, dude, that's not a secret yeah. anymore. I know that thing already. He goes, yeah, but now you're going to take it and share it. I'm like, that's what I'm supposed to do. Come up with yeah. a new secret then. So he didn't get hired a second time. That's how I felt yeah. about it. I go, you have to train people. You have to share your knowledge. I was always the guy on site. I like the younger people coming on my sites, and I always told them, ask me any question you want. If I don't have the answer, guess what? I got a job site with all kinds of different tradespeople. I will introduce you to that electrician, yeah. plumber, HVAC. Pick their brain, please.
Yeah.
And they will give you the fair answer, right?
Yeah. And that's what I tell everyone now, especially now that I'm on the management side. I'm like, if I'm the smartest person in the room,
yeah, we're in trouble.
We're in big trouble.
I've never been. Yeah. I'm always impressed by how tradespeople have figured out. I look at them, I'm like, you're a professional. Like, I'm an amateur compared to what you are.
Yeah.
You do this 5 days, 6 days a week, then the side jobs. You've done it for 5 plus whatever, 10 years. You're a professional, man. There's yeah. a huge difference between a professional tradesperson and their skill level and someone who's just getting started and being told, like, taught the minor little ropes,
yeah.
right? It's night and day. It's the difference between a regular person driving on the 401 and you got Lewis Hamilton driving. That's the difference.
Yeah.
I look at, they're all stars. These guys and girls have figured out how to be a serious professional skill tradesperson. And you got to give them a lot of respect for yeah. that. And if you're a kid and you ever get the opportunity to speak to somebody like that, you better take advantage of that situation.
Yeah.
That's important, right?
Yeah.
But the government isn't doing that.
No. And that's why, another reason why we need to take things into our own hands. A bigger project we're working on as a company, and it's going to, I don't know when we'll kick it off, is because we always, you know, advertise ourselves as being world class, especially on the engineering and the tooling side. We've got the 55-year-old mold maker I mentioned. He was actually yeah. born and trained in Germany, came to Canada about 30 years ago. One of the guys who's 69, he was born in Hungary, actually trained as a millwright, came to Canada 40 years ago, did a few years in drywall when he got here just to get started, and then got into tool making.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are top class. So we're thinking of developing our own, like, in-house apprenticeship program
with these guys.
They're obviously still going to have to go through the Ontario program. They'll go do their three stints of 8 weeks at schooling. But and the feedback there is, because I know some of the teachers at Georgian, is usually our guys are top of the class anyways. But if we have our own internal apprenticeship program, then, you know, they're going to be that much better and help push us.
I agree.
As a company, that much further ahead.
I agree. And actually, it will help the company grow too.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right. How long has the company been around?
Our current owners, Dave and Tom, bought it in 2006.
Okay.
But it's been around since 1980. Until they bought it, it was basically a prototype shop.
Oh.
Yeah. So when they bought it, they both are mechanical engineers, worked in the plastics industry. Very hands-on. Tom's dad's actually a tool maker. So for the first year, they ran MPC with just the two of them. So they were building tools, making the parts, finding customers, doing everything by themselves.
Wow.
And then slowly built it up, and now we've got about 85 people, two buildings, almost 50 molding machines, 17 guys in the tool room. And yeah, do about 20, 22 million a year in sales. So yeah, and
Employing almost 100 people.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, that's what part of what I love about MPC is the culture. And Dave and Tom say, you know, we're not here to make plastic parts every day, because that would be depressing, right? If that was your focus and that's all you're doing.
Yes and no. Right?
But it's still
pretty impressive.
We're here for the bigger picture. We're here to build that culture where people want to come to work. They feel like they're contributing. They go home, they're supported. We're supporting 85 families in the community.
That's big.
Putting all that money back into the community. Yeah, that's why we're here, right? And then with starting this mentorship leadership program, our own internal apprenticeship program, you know, in the long run, it's only going to help the company grow even more.
So, you know how YouTube has that award that if you reach 100,000 subscribers, they give you this little framed award button or whatever it is, right? And it's like you achieved this milestone.
Yeah.
I rather our stupid government come up to companies like yours going, listen, once you guys hit 100 employees, we understand the value you are in Canada and what you're providing to 100 families and everything like that. Here's a plaque for you guys. Thank you very much. I'd rather they announce that as a sound media bite than the bullshit that they're sharing.
Yeah.
Because that, to me, it gives you a sense of pride. You understand that, listen, this is our own backyard. And like you said, they're helping families, you know, that they're building communities at that point. And if they did it in that area, then somebody else can do it in another area. And then all of a sudden you start doing all these different areas all over Canada. You start getting a thriving nation at that point.
Yeah.
And everyone starts going, well, I want to get a trillium plaque or whatever. You've reached a milestone. Thank you very much for your service and really keep it up. Keep going at that point.
Yeah.
But they're not doing that.
No. And that's just, I hate to keep harping on the SDF fund, but that, you know, $1.5 billion, it really bugs me.
I'd like to see where all that money's going to go.
With the stuff they post on social media, mainly on LinkedIn, I've asked that a few times. You know, I said, you know, it's great that you're investing in the skilled trades, but I'd really love to see where all this money's going. But of course, it's crickets. It's a lot of money.
How much is going to admin? How much is being...
Well, yeah, so perfect example. It's about... approximately 20-30% is for companies for the admin of the training. So we're giving you $100,000 of free training. We're also going to give you $30,000 for the admin portion of that training.
That's $450 million.
Yep. Exactly. Out of our tax dollars.
You could take 450 good established companies across Canada, give them each $1 million, and they will do far better with that.
Right? Like we talked about with wages now and inflation, like, you know, maybe we could bump up the wages for skilled trades so it's actually worth it for people to get started.
Or you prove yourself as a skilled trade that you get a, or you've done so many hours, or you've achieved this, or you can get someone to refer and reference you and go, yeah, he or she actually accomplished this and they have huge value. And then here you go. Thank you very much. Yeah. Now you're worth $50 an hour, $60 an hour, and so on and so on. That's what you should be doing. But the problem is the government is doing it on the basis of three letters, DEI. And that's what I have a major problem. And I love trolling on social media, and I see some of these posts, and I would just be like, this is wonderful that you're giving all this money to the specific group here in Canada, but how about focusing some attention on the 95% of people that are currently working in this industry? Why are they being left out in the dark? Like, I've had electricians reach out to me saying, listen, there's new funds coming out, but me being a white electrician, I'm not allowed to get any of those funds.
Yeah. How does that make any sense?
It doesn't make any sense, in my opinion. It goes against what you want to do, trying to grow stuff, right? So it's unfortunate. Yeah. So it's sad to hear that $450 million of that 1.5 is going to go to admin, which is, in my opinion, laundering money, basically.
That's what I call, it's basically a big slush fund.
Yeah. And it's future taxpayer debt money. That's all it is, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I think that I've always said it, government doesn't belong in construction. We know how to fix our problems. Just let us be, and we'll figure it out on our own. We don't need your assistance, right?
Yeah.
We definitely don't need your sound media bites, right?
No.
So I don't know if it's going to change. And I'm just trying to think of, have you done any research on countries that are actually doing well with skilled trades or?
No, but it is, I have reached out just on LinkedIn, nothing serious, to a couple people over in Europe. Because I don't know if it's fact, but as by reputation, they always seem to have a better apprenticeship program over there. But then it also goes right back to their education system. And I'm not an expert on this, but from what I understand, around the grade 7 or 8, they kind of divide everyone into two streams. So one stream is more the skilled trade side. Okay. And then the other side is more, if you want to call college, university.
Okay.
But say you wanted to be, the example I heard was, say you want to be a police officer, you can still get there through both sides. But if you go to the university side, you can become an inspector, a detective. If you go this route, then you're an officer on the street.
Okay. Really?
Yeah. So, but
can you ever cross over? So if you want, you've already trained here and I want to go on to this other side now, I guess.
And like, I don't know enough about it. Okay. It's something I need to look into more, though. And that's why for our internal apprenticeship program, we're really going to be pulling on our guy who was trained in Germany and the guy who was trained in Hungary as a millwright to find out in detail from them what their apprenticeship looked like. So we can try and incorporate some of that stuff into our MPC apprenticeship.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense. I don't know why we, as much as, listen, I'd love to keep on harping on Canada and we just do everything else off right here. But the thing is, with today's technology, why are we not looking at the rest of the world and what they're doing?
Yeah.
Like, exactly. I know that with certain trades in the UK, like painting and wallpapering and even roofing, there's an extensive programs for all of those. I know I've interviewed guys who have come from here to go to specific woodworking programs in Paris and France, right? And then they do a Top Gun version of woodworking there. And then they come back here and start applying those same skills, you know? So it's like, why are we not paying attention to what's going on in Eastern Europe, what's going on in the UK, what's going on in Australia,
what's going on in Japan,
Japan, everything, Asia, all this other stuff, right? We can get rid of the safety requirements in China. That's a different story. But like, why are we not paying attention to that and bring some of those great ideas back here?
Yeah.
Or even hire somebody from there and bring, like you guys, you're taking advantage of people that have all this skill from back there and you're using it here.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And even if we want to go back further, is, you know, the last 10 years, there's been so much on kids and their ADD and all this stuff. It's like, you know, the education system has been sitting at a desk all day for 15 years you're in school, 12, 15 years. Like, kids aren't just meant, they're not meant to sit still for that long, right? Like, maybe we need to relook at that and get them moving, get them doing stuff with their hands. And then at that early age, we're developing the skills of working with your hands, doing stuff, so that by the time they get older, you know, it's just, what would you call it? Not instinctive. It's, you know, it's just part of who they are. You can
grow from it.
Yeah.
Like, I look at it, why are we not, someone sent me, there was a restaurant or something like that where, or daycare, I can't remember what it was, huge sand pit. like massive sand pit with toy excavators and toy machinery and toy everything. And all the kids were playing with this, right? And building these forts and all this other stuff. And I'm like, kids, I want to be in there. I want to try that out.
Exactly.
Why are we not putting that in the back of our elementary schools? Why are we not having teachers there going, we can build a fort here, guys. Let's build a fort.
Yeah.
And then start implementing some building techniques in that fort. So it's not like this fort's going to last all the seasons and go through the winter. But if you start educating those kids at that age, what a wall assembly is, what a window, what a door, what a roof, all that stuff, that starts attracting kids to getting into skilled trades. It will sit with them.
Yeah, it's funny when you mentioned that. If I added up the hours I spent sitting in a sandbox as a kid doing that stuff, and then, you know, going out to my uncle's farm and, you know, as a 12-year-old getting to drive tractors and stuff, like, then it's real. You're playing in the sandbox when you're 5, and then when you're 12, you're actually driving the stuff.
Protect your investment one drop at a time. Your home or project deserves the very best when it comes to waterproofing. Trust nothing less than the service that guarantees you peace of mind and lasting protection. Meet Antonio, the expert behind AquaStop Waterproofing. Whether you're a homeowner wanting to keep your basement dry or a contractor in search of a reliable partner, Antonio and his skilled team deliver unparalleled quality and service. From the first site assessment to the final backfill, every detail is handled with precision, ensuring your project is completed on time, on budget, and to the highest standard. Antonio's team doesn't just solve problems, they prevent them. With a proven track record of working with insurance companies, educating clients, and using the best products available, AquaStop Waterproofing offers a solution you can depend on for years to come. Experience the difference with a team committed to excellence. Antonio and AquaStop Waterproofing are your go-to professionals for all things waterproofing. Get in touch with AquaStop Waterproofing today at 647-631-4144 or visit them at www.aquastopwaterproofing.ca. For direct inquiries, email Antonio at antonio@aquastopwaterproofing.ca. Let's make sure your property stays safe and sound, rain or shine. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
What's
funny is the stick shift thing.
Oh, yeah.
All the car thefts that are going on, and how if it's stick shift, they can't steal the car because they don't know how to do it.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
And I'm like, well, when I was a kid, like you turn 16, get your license. I did the 5-day crash course to get my license class, right? Yeah. The course, right? And all of a sudden, as soon as I got my license, learn how to drive stick because I couldn't afford to buy an automatic car because it was a premium.
Yeah.
So I had to get a stick car. So I had to learn how to drive a stick car. And now I know how to drive a stick car, but today's generation has no idea how to drive a stick car.
No.
But that would be tractor. That would be machinery. Yeah. That would be...
Like as a 12-year-old trying to, you know, this tractor and... Clutches on those were a little different. Trying to get it in gear, it was definitely grind until you find it.
I had Stefano, Northern Snowplow and Lawn Maintenance up in North Bay. He was on the show, and I asked him, who's he hire? He goes, gamers. Gamers know how to do all the jogging in the machinery. And I was like, that's brilliant. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
He's done really well hiring gamers to drive his plows and his machinery. And I'm like, it makes sense. Now you're like, you're a gamer, but you're making money.
Yeah.
You know, you got crappy hours because you go when it's winter and it's snowing, but you're achieving a job and you're being paid to basically do what you did, just sitting on the couch doing nothing, right?
Yeah. And it's not, it's a bit different, but it's the same with our CNC programmers, right? It's, it's not... Not quite like driving a snowplow or a front-end loader, but when you're programming your machines, you're on your screen after you're done your programming, you're simulating everything to make sure it's going to run right. And it's not exactly the same, but there's a lot of things in common with gaming. And
I know a woodworker, he just upgraded his CNC.
Yeah.
And he's blown away by what he can do, and he's been messing around, and he's the one that made these for me.
Yeah.
Right. Put the logo on it and everything. And he talks to me on the side. He goes, this is what else I can do. This is what else I'll try. I go, you realize you're a woodworker, right? You're a woodworker, but you've got a laptop right next to the CNC and you've got saws and sands and all kinds of other machinery around you, but you're still a woodworker, but you're taking new tech and you're woodworking with the new tech.
Yeah.
That's what we need to attract kids. So you talk about a shop class, which has been completely removed from education now.
Yeah.
There should be a new version of a shop class that has all this new machinery, yeah. this new tech.
And there, so it is starting to make a comeback after being, you know, like pushed to the side and building schools without shop classes, which still blows my mind.
Yeah.
Up by, there's a small town up by us, Midland, Ontario.
Okay.
Which is pretty much an industrial town. They built a new high school 5 to 10 years ago. And it, the old one had 3-4 huge shop classes. The new one has nothing. I'm like, what were, like, who made that decision? It's crazy. But anyways, on the plus side, I've been to a couple high schools, and, you know, shop classes are coming back. CTMA, which is Canadian Tooling Manufacturers Association, and I apologize to them if I have that wrong. They've been playing a big role in donating equipment. So I was up at the school in Orillia, and I think he had total about $180,000 worth of equipment donated by them. So some small CNC mills, 3D printers, some little tabletop mills, a manual mill, a lathe. Yeah, so it's good. Things are starting to happen. And then, of course, you know, it came time to, with that, when you're hooking up that kind of equipment, like moving them, installing them electrical, it costs a bit of money. So the good old, you know, the school didn't want to pay for that, and the school board didn't want to pay for that. So they were fighting over it. And it's like, you just got $180,000 worth of free equipment that you signed up for and said you would pay for the installing. So I haven't talked to him recently to see if he's got that sorted out, but I know he was working on it. And
I'd go even further, Daryl. I was like, I know a lot of European big machinery that's used for stone fabrication. You start getting into 5-axis, 3D carving, all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah.
You speak to these companies, you go, listen, make a mini version of this, put it into a school. You tell me you're not going to see kids' eyes light up when they have the opportunity to start carving stone or other kinds of material with this machinery? And if there's a problem with the machinery, the kids figure it out.
Yeah.
Right? They'll speak to their headquarters, whatever, but you start speaking the language that these kids are being taught in the school application now. That's huge opportunities for kids there.
Yeah, for sure.
It's easy for the governments to approach these companies and ask for this stuff as a donation.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially now with the all the troubleshooting that's done online where they can just remotely hook up to the machine or whatever it is, and
you get the kids
working up. Yeah.
And they go, talk to some kid in some other country. I have this problem on this machine. This is what happened. Yeah. What can we solve? Well, this is how I solved it. Then they solve it. That's the best satisfaction for any kid is when they actually solve a problem or build something.
Yeah. Then they're engaged.
100%.
Yeah.
Then they're curious about, okay, where can my career go from here? That's when you get a teacher basically saying, you decide.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, right? But we're not giving them that opportunity. We're not seeing the value of engaging with these companies with these products that these kids can perfect. And then you make an arrangement with the company going, listen, this kid has upgraded your machine now. It's yours now. Thank you very much for the donation. We're not expecting anything in return, but he actually or she actually is asking for a position in your company now. Is that a possibility? Can you start fabricating your machines here in North America? Can they be a part of that team? You know where I'm going. This is where it starts to be the engagement of being in the skilled trades instead of them leaving the skilled trades even before they started the skilled trades, right? I haven't heard a single politician talk about those, but you talk to people in the industry and they come up with these ideas. And then if you start getting these younger people coming into the industry, I'm encouraging them to come up with new ideas. I want you to figure out a better mousetrap.
Yeah.
We really need better mousetraps in this industry.
Yeah.
We've done it this way for so many years, so many decades. We understand it, but we need to do it this way now. How do we do this?
Yeah, no, it's a great idea. And it is possible. We've got Tom, one of our owners, who is a brilliant engineer. We have a wire EDM. So it's a machine that using brass wire, it's literally anywhere from like a 4 thou diameter to a 10 thou.
Okay.
Using, so EDM is electrical discharge machine.
Okay.
So putting power through the wire, you can cut through steel, any shape, like 1 inch thick, 6 inches thick, and then any shape, just like your friend did with the woodworking there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when we bought this machine, you know, the company manufacturer claimed it was good to whatever tolerance. And then just by him playing with it, engineering, he was actually able to get a better tolerance than they advertised. So it is possible with the right people working on stuff, right?
I believe it. But we need this next gen to be doing that.
Yeah.
We're not even giving them that opportunity.
No.
That was the one thing I always, I proud, like myself on job site, I was always, when I got started in construction, I wasn't interested in the standard materials that were going on here. So I started inquiring about what trade shows do I need to go to start seeing new tech, new ideas, new material.
Yeah.
So none of my jobs, you know, I'll give you just a basic example. I never did scratch coat tile install. I started from Detroit. I started with Schluter, never looked back. So I had kids come on job sites and they're like, I've never done Detra. I go, here you go. You're going to do it for the first time now. They were always taught scratch coat because that's what they were being taught. And I was like, why aren't you using the new tech? You should be using the new tech now. And that's what I always wanted to do. I wanted to try something new. And I go, here's an opportunity for you to do it. I'm here. If there's an issue, I'll show you. I'll walk you along. Now you're being educated with new material to do projects that will last longer. And now when you get to the point where you want to start your own business or you want to excel in your trades, your skills, you know how to do it. And then, you know, you don't ask them to do it, but they will teach somebody else that same that I taught them. And it goes on and on and on from there. That's what you want to do. I'm just thinking about the big machinery because there's an opportunity there. But you need to get more blue collar into the politician positions, speaking up and just saying that wasn't a question. Yeah. I'm telling you that this is how we're doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not asking your permission. We're going to do it this way.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, this is how we're going to attract more skilled people into this industry.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a little bit hopeful when Jill Dunlop became the education minister because her family background is in plumbing. I think it was her grandpa started a plumbing business in Coldwater, Ontario. So I was hoping with her background at the trades, maybe we could start making some traction, getting it more into the actual education system too and starting it earlier. But we'll see. She just moved into that position in September, I think. So she came out for a visit in November, October, and I've had some correspondence with her office. Sent her a list of ideas. One of them was to attract more companies that would take on co-op students.
Have you got a response yet from her or not yet?
I talked to one of her assistants a couple weeks ago, and she said that was when I sent her the email with all the lists. So no, I haven't heard back yet. And now they'll be busy with the election, so who knows what will happen. But I'll definitely follow up because I think that is a huge one, right? If there's some sort of...
Yeah.
incentive for companies to take on co-op students. And I'm going through that now with I've got 4 kids. The oldest is my daughter. She's in 4th year university taking kinesiology. She wants to be a chiropractor, so she's set. We're not sure where her mother and I aren't sure where she got the brains for that, but she's doing well in school. And then 3 boys. So my next son, he graduated in June. He's doing his carpenter's apprenticeship. Did a co-op in grade 12 and signed up. And then the next one's in grade 11, and he's starting a co-op in a couple of weeks. And he doesn't know what he wants to do, but he wants to try plumbing. So, you know, like a good dad, I was telling him in, like, September, you need to start looking for that co-op position because it's not going to be easy.
No, it's going to be hard, yeah.
So,
but he'll find one.
I hope so.
Yeah, he'll find one.
He's got 2 weeks. And then, so he did finally, I give him credit, finally last week ago Friday, went to see his co-op teacher and he helped him do up a resume and he dropped off a couple. And then I was talking to another plumber friend last night who he works by himself and just his son just graduated high school, so he can't take him on. But he's like, he needs to go get in with one of the big companies where they have lots of people for him to work with. And he needs to go meet them face to face and talk to them. And I'm like, yeah, that's great advice. Maybe he'd listen to you, but he doesn't listen to me.
It's intimidating though, right? Yeah. Like it's like, I can see it through their perspective. Yeah. Like you walk into this big corporation, this big company, there's lots of crews, lots of service vans, lots of everything. And you're like, I don't belong here. I'm scared right now. Like, this is like, I don't want to do anything. Yeah. Like, even I would be a little nervous to be in there, right? Yeah. I get it, but they just got to find the right placement. Yeah. That's all it is. Exactly. Find the right placement, right? But that goes back to the one-to-one ratio, right? Where you can't take them on because it's not going to benefit the business. Yeah. You got to get rid of these rules now, right? Like, this is really about, we're in survival mode. We don't need more people into the industry. We need to train this industry. That's what we need to train, right? Attention subcontractors and skilled trades. Are you looking for your next big opportunity? 2x2 Construction is expanding and is on the hunt to grow our top-tier network of professionals. Whether you're a carpenter, plumber, or roofer, etc., if you can deliver top-quality craftsmanship, offer competitive pricing, and your communication is where we shine, we want to hear from you. At 2x2 Construction, we value strong partnerships. From multiplexes to garden suites, we're all about building better together, and we want you to be a part of it. Reach out today at info@2x2construction.ca or connect with us on Instagram at 2x2construction. Join the 2x2 Construction team where great work meets great people. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Yeah. So what do you think then? Because we hear the government's advertising all the time now. We need people in the skilled trades. From what you're seeing on the construction side, like you said, there's a lot of people laid off right now at home. Are there any trades in particular in the construction side where we really need people?
It's always the hardest ones, right?
Yeah.
So you start getting into the concrete, the masonry. That's never changed. That's always stayed the same because it's the hardest ones, right? Yeah. Then you start getting into the roofing industry. Mm-hmm. There is no need for the top three. Like, there's plenty of electricians, plumbers, HVAC out there, right? Yeah. I think you start you start creating more opportunities for a lot more skilled trades. You start figuring out, concrete is one thing. Like, I know a lot of people that are, if you're not doing ICF, you're going to be a dinosaur real soon. There's a lot of stick-in-the-mud concrete people that are just formers, and they'll always stay formers. And I'm like, it's a phone booth, man. I'm sorry, it's a phone booth. Yeah. ICF is a thing. Code is changing. We're asking for insulation on the outside of that concrete.
Yeah.
So to form it, pour it, and then apply foam is not efficient.
Yeah.
So if someone could figure out, I mean, you have Durarock, they're already putting foam into their concrete sheets that are being used for, you know, wet applications. Yeah. So there's got to be concrete. Look to the world. Where's most concrete being spent? It's the Middle East. It's the Middle East, and it's in Russia, and it's like Eastern European. That's where concrete is being spent quite a bit.
Yeah.
Figure out what they're doing differently compared to the concrete here. You got a lot of public sector, infrastructure, industrial, commercial projects. But again, it's concrete, big wires, you know, stuff like that. You have to work your way up to that. You can't be thrown in as a junior. Because you'll possibly lose your life, if not be completely scared of the whole industry because of that experience, right? So it's just, but you could also be a mason. Like, I mean, I'd love to see more of the art of masonry come back into Canada. I'm a big fan of seeing all those classic Toronto homes with a lot of those brick details and stone details. And I love seeing all that stuff. But there's also new products that are coming out that are slightly different, and people need to be figuring out how to install those, right? So I think you just got to do a lot of research, try to figure out exactly where there's opportunities, find those smaller companies that are just on the verge of becoming bigger companies, and volunteer your services and go, listen, can I work for you guys as a shadow? Can I just be a part of this? And then, you know, just do it on your own. Take a summer, take 3 months, take a month. And just get in there and be a sponge, learn. And then you never know what that's going to take you. What's it going to do for you, right? But that's where I think everybody's looking for the quick buck. They're trying to figure out, well, how do I get to $100,000 in 1 year? That's electrician, plumber, and HVAC. HVAC, you still need a lot of those tickets. And a lot of even big HVAC companies, and I say big, I mean, I'm talking about 7 to 10 crews. You know what I mean? That, in my eyes, is a big HVAC company. It's a small in the scheme of things. But even if you were to approach them, they're like, listen, I don't need a fresh fish.
Yeah.
I need someone who has already some skills, some so I can leave them alone and then they can do servicing, they can take care of stuff, but that person doesn't have that skill set yet. You have to work your tickets up that one, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with electrician, same thing with plumber. If they want to work the hard jobs, like I would say the masonries, they'll do really well, right? Or even figure out new ways of trying to listen, we got lots of interesting new bricks that are coming from Europe, that are coming into Canada, that are different ways of laying that you have to pay attention to, and you need to have the skill set there. So if go on a vacation, go to Spain and go volunteer on a masonry crew there for a month or something. Like, I don't know. I would just look at it that way, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I know on the manufacturing side, there's always a need for millwrights, industrial electricians, tool and die makers, mold makers, machinists, CNC guys. It's hard to find a really good one, but there's more guys out there in that than mold makers. Yeah, it's a big struggle.
But it's the programming, too. You need someone to figure out how to make better programming, right? If you can. Like, that's the problem. Like, we have to figure out how to do this. Those are the kids. It ain't going to be me. I'm fascinated by that stuff. Like, I'd still, if you know how it's made was on still on TV, I'd still be watching it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I pay attention to that whole assembly line stuff. Construction is assembly line. You just need to figure out what part of the whole cog, like that thing, like, where do you fit in there? Right?
Yeah.
So I think that I would tell kids, stay away from anybody that's associated with the government right now. Don't listen to them. Try to find as many tradespeople at different levels of trade and construction to pick their brain. Most people, depending on the age group, they're online. So I would definitely recommend follow them, pay attention to what they're sharing until you get the nerve to reach out and send them a message. And then if they're local in your hood nearby, suggest if you can come out and just meet them for a coffee. Cost you $10 to get them a coffee and sit down for an hour and just pick their brain, go and listen, bring a notepad or set up your notes on your iPad or whatever, and just write down what that person tells you and then just be blunt with them. How do I start?
Yep.
Where do I go? Who should I consider?
Yeah. It's the starting point for networking, right? They may not have a job, but they may know someone who does or know someone who knows someone. It's like the beginning of your network, right? Make that first contact.
And that first contact is not a job interview.
No.
It's your career interview. You're doing that contact to find out opportunities of where you should consider going. That's what it should be done, right? So don't go in there begging for a job or begging for a position.
Yeah.
That's not why you're doing this. You're doing this to kind of get an idea of where to go with you, your options are, right?
Yeah.
Before you're told to get out of this industry, right?
And that's what I've suggested to my son with his co-op, because he doesn't know what he wants to do. I said, well, try plumbing. And then if you don't like it, in grade 12, take another co-op and try something else.
Yeah.
Got nothing to lose.
Nothing. You'll still learn the skill there.
Yeah.
When he does get his own house, he'll be able to take care of his own plumbing at that point, right?
Yep.
That's what's scary is that you got a lot of generation here that doesn't know how to do a lot of this basic stuff in a house, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Anything else you want to share before I ask you the 12 questions?
No, I don't.
Thanks so much, Darryl. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Thanks again for having me.
And just talking shop, and this is an important question to be... It's never going to get answered. It's just a bunch of solutions, right?
Yeah.
And we have to see what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
What's currently going on doesn't work.
No. But I think the big thing is to get the message out there to fix it. It's going to take those of us that are in the skilled trades.
Yes. 100%. It takes all of us, right?
Yeah.
And I've said it over and over. You get into trades, you're going to be a teacher one day.
Yeah.
If you don't want to be a teacher one day, then you're that grumpy old person, then fine. Stay on that side of the fence. I don't care.
Yeah.
Right? But the majority of people in the construction industry, they love being teachers. They love sharing. They love letting them know how it was, how it's become, and what's the possibility in the future with it, right? And they love seeing a new bright star coming into the industry with the hope of trying to contribute to the industry and making it better, right?
Yeah. So. And you're right. I think... Going back to your first question, like how did I kind of get into this? The skilled trades advocacy, as we move on in our careers, probably my mid-40s, I started thinking I really need to focus on training the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last couple of years, it's developed into, well, not only do I need to do that, I need to help attract the next generation to the skilled trades, go even further.
I joke all the time that I wish I had this podcast when I got started. It would have helped me save a bunch of money and avoid a bunch of problems. But now it's out there. So now you guys, anybody who's listening, they can listen to it and figure out what they want to do with their lives, right? So may not agree with everybody that's been on the show, but that's not my problem. Like that's...
No.
It's there. You decide.
Yeah.
You can reach... So if you want to... Anybody want to reach out to Daryl and just chat with him, you can reach him at daryl@nextgenskilltrades.com. And the website will be up soon enough. But then IG is already up, right? So it's under Next Gen Skill Trades, right?
And then LinkedIn and Facebook are just under my name.
Daryl Greatrix. Under your name, Daryl Graphics there.
Greatrix.
I'm thinking about the graphics magazine.
Yeah.
Back in the... I don't know if they make that anymore, man. Ready for these?
Sure.
A person you would trade places with for a day.
It's a good question. And you know what? I even took the time to write down my answers. I printed that off and wrote down my answers.
And forgot it?
And forgot it, yeah.
Did you print it off? Like, or is a digital copy of it somewhere? No?
No.
Do you remember? Or we're both getting too old?
I
remember
both. I know. It's awful.
Come a little closer to the mic.
Let's go. Can we come back to that one?
Sure. Guilty pleasure. What's your guilty pleasure?
Sweets, ice cream.
Any particular? Yeah.
Peanut butter, chocolate, ice cream, pies, tarts. Growing up, when I was out at the... Because my dad grew up on the farm. His mom was like the old farm wife, like baking every day.
Butter tarts.
Butter tarts, pies, chocolate chip.
Now, is a butter tart once you start adding the pecans and chocolate? Nah. That's not a butter tart.
No.
That's not a butter tart.
And I don't like it runny, making a mess all over the place. It's,
I don't know why people do this.
No.
It's like there's one, it's the staple, and it's good. Leave it alone.
Keep it simple.
What's your least favorite tool?
Working in the shop. Like a drill, dull drill bit.
Yeah, burning, smelling when you're not supposed to be burning, smelling anything.
And I still remember learning how to sharpen one properly. Took a lot, you know, that hand eye.
Remember the drill doctor?
Yes. Yes.
Is that still around?
I haven't seen one.
The drill doctor. Get it now. Get a second one for $19.99. Yeah, I miss those. Yeah. What's the biggest risk you ever took?
Probably getting into the trades, you know, especially when I had that advice. Well, you know, you got to be working on cars or something like that to get into the trades. So, fortunately, I didn't listen to him.
Yeah, that's true. Best compliment you ever got?
Last year we had a kid who was graduating from Georgian College come through our tool room to check us out, and he was like top of the class. Last year he went to the World Skilled Trades Championship in France for CNC.
Wow.
And so, you know, he wanted to come work for us. And we said, well, you know, you still have time. Go around and visit a bunch of other shops and see what you think. And when he came back, he said he still wanted to work for us. And the reason was that when he walked around our shop, the guys made eye contact with him, were smiling. Most other places that you went, it looked like people were depressed, didn't even want to be there, wouldn't look up at them. So, you know, that was because culture, I spent a lot of time.
It's a good thing.
On building culture, yeah.
What's your favorite beverage?
That first coffee in the morning.
What never makes or what never fails to make you laugh?
Physical comedy, you know, like
slapstick.
Yeah. Chris Farley, Will Ferrell, that kind of stuff.
You ever get back to the old school, like the way back, Buster Keaton or like those kinds
No.
So Naked Gun, the whole...
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
All those, yeah.
Worst piece of advice you ever got?
It's that same answer. Don't go into the trades. Yeah. I kind of cheated there. I used the same answer for two questions.
No, you can do that. There's no rules on this. Yeah. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
I thought about this one a bit. You know, it would be, you know, especially as a guy, that need for speed, I'd love to be like Formula One driver or, you know, street motorcycles or something with that crazy speed.
Do you ride? Oh, you don't ride?
No.
What's your favorite curse word?
probably the good old F-bomb. You know, it's got so many uses, and I try not to swear much, so when I do drop one, it has a lot more effect.
What's your favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
I like my truck.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's nothing fancy. It's like a 2015 F-150. So it's not new, but, you know, I don't know. I just like being up a bit higher. You know, it's just fun to drive a truck, right?
And plus you have still, the back, and you can throw something in there.
Yeah, exactly. And with, I had four kids, right? Three boys playing hockey. So there's always lots of room. And, you know, in the winter when it's snowing, you know, I'm still like a 16-year-old boy doing fishtails around the corners and having fun.
There's some, I saw some crappy news that GM's going to be bringing back the El Camino. But it looks like crap.
I don't know if it's real.
I don't know if that's AI. I don't know what extent of it is, but it looks like crap. It's not an El Camino. Yeah.
It looked like a pretty AI generated. Let's hope.
So I don't know. Last question, or sorry, no. Yeah. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
I hope I get this right. Well done, my good and faithful servant.
And then the first question, a person you would trade places with for a day.
So many options on this one because, you know, I don't know how much you could do in one day, but say you were got a position of power in the government. If it was only one day, how much could you fix? Well, that would be one option.
Well, down south, he did quite a bit on that first day. He was just signing up a storm.
I was thinking more like change in a good way, not just change.
He's got another a big option, signature.
You know, as a kid, Wayne Gretzky was in his prime, you know, with the Oilers when he was putting up 200 points a year, you know. Have a day in the life of Gretzky back then in his prime. That would be pretty cool.
That's actually a good way to look at it. Like, pick somebody that had their ultimate day. And that's the day that I would want to be.
Like maybe the day he won that first Stanley Cup.
That would be pretty cool.
That'd be pretty awesome.
That'd be pretty cool. Daryl, thank you very much, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate you sitting down and talking shop. And I wish you the best with everything, man. Let me know how I can be supportive and when everything's all fully launched and getting out there, man.
Yeah. All the best. And I love talking about the skilled trades.
Awesome. That's it. We're all done.